Welcome to the special show of the coronavirus, a disease that has impacted the world. Today's guest is Sunil Joshi, who is a cellular immunologist, a graduate of the University of Miami School of Medicine. Sunil, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So Sunil, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm actually a cellular immunologist and have a lot of experience working with the various pathogens, especially tuberculosis, malaria, influenza, but recently I started working on bone marrow transplant in University of Miami, Department of Pediatrics.
And how has this virus impacted your world? Have you taken a look into it?
Yes, definitely. So, I have a student back in India who is working on some of the artificial intelligence and data analysis over these different genomic information, and we really find out a few drug targets as well as some important information which is not available anywhere, and then we actually compiled a treatment regimen and to give it to the government of India, and then they are implicating that. So I'm constantly working since even it has started, constantly monitoring and how things are moving. And right now, precaution is the best thing because unfortunately there are most of the studies which is publishing are not accurate or somehow misleading, and that's a big problem.
How has the studies been changed these past couple of weeks? Have you learned some new things about the virus?
Yes, of course. So if you remember, the first paper came in Nature February 3rd, which was defining the very first case of coronavirus in Wuhan, China. And that case was there was one case, it happened there, and then things going on since then. I think from last I would say from beginning of this year until now, maybe 8,000 paper publication has been in the market, and they are so much different because virus genome is described by several people in different ways, and which is again is a very misleading because if it is the same clone of the virus, it shouldn't be changing paper wise. Secondly, there is controversy about the different use of different drugs. Of course, we do not have any experimental data on the drugs which are working. And in some cases it is working, some cases not, so that is also very confusing. However, in this crisis where we do not really know yet how virus really going to be inhibited, we have to try the best possible combination. So logically what we did use some software, and we started docking the different drug targets, and we found some very interesting thing that vitamin C, zinc, and vitamin B3, and vitamin C and folic acid, they are all very inhibitory to the virus. It doesn't kill the virus, but actually people got so much of better after taking this, even as a prophylactic. And these are without any side effects. However, we can't propose this as a treatment because we don't have a data. So this is where we are. And then regarding the variability in the day-to-day publications, there is a tremendous amount of confusion. So, and who collected, when collected, what are the disease states, there are a lot of answers more there are a lot of questions more than answers.
Of course, you've been talking about some other remedies like vitamin C and vitamin D. What have you heard about hydrochloroquine?
Yes. So hydrochloroquine or chloroquine is a very old drug and is constantly being used into the tropical countries like India, where malaria is very prevalent. So here is the thing which I was surprised that, of course, some people are saying that it working and some people say it doesn't work. But there is no measurement whether it worked because of the drug or because the general natural immunity is working. We don't know. But one thing I want to clarify here. Some people said that it is actually having a positive effect because of it inhibits the antigen presentation. And then some people said that it lowered down the immune response. So how can it be beneficial? And also some people said that in publication that it is not effective, but at the same time a French group claiming that it is very effective. In our experience, again, without any bench or experimental evidence, we found it is effective. So here is the thing. The hydroxychloroquine, this drug is working in a very different way in different doses at different conditions. Let me give you an example. If you are suffering from a malaria, and if you're suffering from a malaria which is not cerebral but only the non-cerebral malaria, then you have a course of the chloroquine around 4 to 5 days and that's it. And you will be cured. During these 4 or 5 days of chloroquine treatment, it cannot suppress the immune system because that you need a little bit more higher what you call activity index of the drug to suppress that function. So in different doses, at different doses, there are different level of functions affected. And that is a big problem here. Some people might be getting positive result because they might have some correct doses. Or some people are giving the doses which is malaria doses, but it may not work. I have personal example. I have suffered from malaria as well as cerebral malaria. So when I was suffering from cerebral malaria, they never gave me chloroquine by mouth, by tablets. They gave me high dose of chloroquine through the saline, injecting just like chemotherapy. And that's how I survived. So it's different. It's just completely different. Chloroquine, one drug can work in multiple ways, in multiple doses and multiple routes. And that is nobody talking about these things.
Yeah, there's been some random testing and, there's for some people it has worked, for some people it hasn't, but it's definitely still being tested.
There's no uniformity in the use of that.
Yeah. Which also they've mixed hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin. I'm not sure how you say it.
Yes. I know. Yeah. Correct. Yeah, that's an antiviral drug they actually discovered for the SARS in the 2013 epidemic.
Many questions are asked. Do you think this virus, the coronavirus or the COVID-19 came from an animal, or do you think it came from a laboratory?
Good question. So in the initial story, and this is I'm talking about published work, because what we will be publishing soon some work which is very different what people are doing it, and it may create a controversy also. So the initial thing we heard that it is coming from the flying bat, where people in China, Wuhan area, where the sea market sells all kind of exotic animals and well, people they use as a food. Well, then after that, we dig out some of the literature, and what we found it in, I believe in 70 or 71, there was a paper, the original paper, which indicated that this virus came from the rat, because there was a rat epidemic. Yeah. So basically, rat was supposed to be the, and you know, the rat is very common animal. You like, even if it is going around, it can spread. Yeah.
Something.
So
yeah.
So that is one part of the story. Then second story is to change quickly that how it actually came and jumped into the human being, and that was the mystery. The reason is the bat actually has another intermediate host, and that is a duck, according to our studies. Nobody has done published this yet. So what we found when we sequenced the genome, and in the genome we found certain portion of the genome which come from the proteins which is in the duck, and then it transmits to the human being, because people in China eat ducks. So these are the different hosts we found it. Now question comes that how the infectivity of this virus is so high.
And why is that?
Because that infectivity is very complicated to understand unless until the laboratories dissect clearly what virus has beyond the virus. Means the report publishing here with the virus genome, people are not putting complete information in the where they are explaining about the genomic structure of the virus. So because if you I'm sure you may know that coronavirus is a common cold virus.
Yeah.
And it is known for multiple years, and it is there always, and we all suffer every year somehow or the other way.
Has there ever Has there ever been in the past where there's diseases from animals jump into humans?
No, not reported. So the study which was in the 70s, the rat, they actually studied only in the rat, and there was no such. But the related epidemic happens with the SARS and MERS, which came from camel like that, and one is came from bird, I think.
How soon do you think a vaccine can be created to put a stop to the coronavirus?
So, in vaccine is also again there are two important factors. So, for example, creating vaccine, technically is not a big problem. Vaccine is, vaccine is nothing but the dead pathogen. And you are injecting into the humans, so human immune system can see that pathogen, and the next time when the live pathogen attack, they are prepared. That's all the basic fundamentals of the vaccine. However, if it is a case, then we are prepared. We are making vaccine for influenza from last more than 50 years. We still have not come up with a solid vaccine which can provide robust immunity for a long time. Similarly, we have a situation where the people get exposed to a disease. So when somebody gets exposed to a disease, that is means, and then he recovered, he should be completely immune, because the amount of antigen the person's immune systems encounter are pretty much very wide range. But still, that even doesn't work out. Now, question comes then, what is the problem with that? First of all, vaccine of the coronavirus, you can find maybe in another month or so, but whether it is a really functional vaccine, that is a question. So that is doubtful, and I think it will take years to solve this problem, because first of all, they should know which epitopes are actually the real epitope which can inhibit the virus. Now, if you look at the sequence wise and find and think that is, those epitopes are going to be antigenic, it may not be. That's the same thing. There are cryptic epitopes, we call cryptic epitopes, and those are that need to be isolated on the basis of studies. So for me, a functional vaccine, very difficult to predict when it will come, but there will be a lot of market vaccine, mostly commercial-based, commercial interest vaccine will be available soon. Yeah.
10 years ago, the H1N1 virus happened. Would you think coronavirus is more serious than that virus, or you think they're very similar?
Well, this is a little controversial question, and I have an answer, but I cannot tell you about this. The reason is the influenza virus, H1N1, that was also a very dangerous virus. There are two ways to look into this. One, how many people died, and or how many people get affected. Second, who are these people? So basically, people with the viral infection, especially coronavirus or influenza virus, they're dying. They are either very old people, or they are very young, or they are immunocompromised with some other problem. Most of them, there are very few healthy people are dying, very few. So here is, again, the clue is here. For working a vaccine, suppose there is a vaccine in the market tomorrow, and you want to work that vaccine as a complete cure for this particular disease, the person who is receiving this vaccine must have an optimal functioning immune response, immune system, and which is very difficult to achieve. Because, for example, old people have a low immune response. Some people are poor because of their socioeconomic condition, their immune system is screwed up. And some people are suffering from some diseases like autoimmune disease or some kind of other diseases, immunosuppressive diseases. So then they screwed up. So that diversity is a big problem. And of course, designing a vaccine for a population is not that going to be. But even if it is, say, about 50% successful, it's a great idea, because those 50% people can be responsible for the herd immunity. So that's the only hope, I think, right now.
H1N1, you know, was also a very powerful virus. How about SARS? Was that very similar to H1N1 and coronavirus?
Yeah, they are all similar, but their infectivity has... So, for example, influenza virus has a couple of strains. And few strains we handle in the lab as a regularly BSL-2 facility. But H1N1... the most pathogenic virus we handle into the BSL-3 facility. So these are the viruses are the same, but different strains has different pathogenesis, pathology, how they affect. So the reason why they are so different, there, the entry of the virus is different in these strains. Some has a very high capacity to enter into the lung tissues and cause this infection. Now, MERS and SARS, they were not very common that time. So that is how they become. So something very, very new, never been exposed, can cause the havoc because of the body doesn't, body is not prepared. Yeah.
Of course, right now, there's a lot of countries doing social separation. And there's also another way of herd community, herd immunity. What do you think about these two different ways to stop the virus?
Right now, actually, frankly speaking, it's all chaos right now. We don't really, we're confused. We are confused. One.
So now?
No.
Oh,
I'm in contact. Hello?
No.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So if somebody is infected and each person is quarantined or not be able to communicate with us, certainly the virus transmission will be stopped. Social distancing has really effective because these viruses does have a certain so body because the reason is not that the person who is six feet from me not receiving those viruses even suppose I am infected, they do, but the viral load is again the important aspect of your immune system. So we encounter thousands of billions of the parasite every single time, every single day, those pathogens, bacteria. But we don't get sick because there is a certain threshold, there is a certain load of those pathogens, which our body easily handles. But beyond the load, suppose load is too much, then it becomes dangerous. So I think social distancing is not eliminating the exposure completely, but it is definitely reducing the burden of the virus on the host.
Do you recommend wearing a mask or also wearing gloves?
Yes. You mean the how they affect you mean?
No, no. To you know, if you're going to a grocery store or to a public area, mm-hmm. you would wearing a mask make much of a difference?
It could, it may not be. So again, you know, this is like a, what do you say? We are walking in a totally dark area. So that does, because suppose you're touching some surfaces where somebody coughed and somebody did it and virus remained for a few hours at least. So you're protected at least with the glove. And mask also protect at least droplets, doesn't go inside. So because again droplet will have billions of the viruses, but I think in the open air it doesn't affect much, but for the precaution wise, yeah, it is, it can be, but I don't think it is really like a guaranteeing that you won't get affected.
Something to definitely look at. This is a pandemic for everyone to remember in the past. So now, what do you recommend everyone to do for the next couple of weeks?
Okay, so the best thing I'm advising right from the beginning, first of all, and that is something I was surprised by medical community is not advising. Because this is starting as a lung infection and everybody talking about lung only. Like pulmonary, and that is okay because that is the first entry point and where this virus creates a lot of trouble. But actually, people are also dying with the kidney failure. And the kidney failure is because there are certain receptors we found in our study also expressed in the kidney and the virus affecting them. So best thing to do right now, increase amount of your drinking water habits. So drink maximum amount of water, number one. Number two, you can, like in water means like you can have like mostly not dry food like soup and lot of liquid diet, lot of things, whatever liquid you can do, because then you can flush virus faster. Second thing, which is more important, is to do some deep breathing exercises. Because again, when virus causes inflammation, your oxygen intake become less, and that leads to you a completely failure of the organ. When oxygen becomes 80% or less, then your organs doesn't work. So these two things, plus then you can use the home remedies. These home remedies are, which is not harmful. For example, drinking a lot of ginger tea, black pepper, and using turmeric powder in their food. These all are anti-inflammatory substances which will be helping you without any doubt. And of course, best thing is that to fight virus is a rest. Rest means minimal physical work, because that will restore your energy to fight virus. So these are I can recommend, because of these, there is nothing wrong in that, nothing can go bad, and these are not drugs as such, but these are the precaution. And water is most important thing, which is like if you're drinking a 3 glass of water a day, just increase to the 6 glass of water a day. That's my point.
Those are Sunil's suggestions. It says drink a lot of liquids, especially water. Yes. Do breathing exercises, and also do home remedies like drinking ginger tea, black pepper, anti-inflammatory remedies, and get a lot of rest.
Right. Actually, it is logically, because when you have some black pepper or ginger tea, they increase the blood circulation in the area of your throat. Okay.
Will, do you think when we reach the summer months, especially here in the Northern Hemisphere, do you think we'll see a huge decrease of people getting the virus?
I can't answer that question, because it's very difficult for me to understand, because here is one of the factors which we didn't discuss. That is, people saying that why some countries do not have that much infection as United States has.
Something to definitely look at, and of course we'll be following coronavirus throughout the next couple of weeks and months. Sunil, what is the best way to reach you online?
Okay, online you can reach with my LinkedIn profile or by email.
And what is your email?
sunil.joshi@med.miami.edu.
And there you have it, Sunil Joshi from the University of Miami Medical School. His contact information is sunil.joshi@med.miami.edu. Pretty exciting times. Well, not exciting times. Interesting times. Interesting times.
Yes. But you know, this we of course in this crisis, this is a big lesson too, especially in American health system. Okay, this is a big lesson. If we don't learn from this, then we are doomed.
Yeah, we're learning a lot. You know, in the health system, also in the business world. People are learning new ways, new things to get, like, the everyday life is different. Thinking of new patterns. Will restaurants have now more tables separated?
Right.
Those, a lot of those question marks. Can things be done more online? I've had a few people that are, getting, things processed through the city, but online. So we're definitely having a reset, but also learning new ways to adapt to this new world for the next couple of months. Hopefully, not too long to get this, get the everyday life going. You can reach us at sleonproductions.com, sleonproductions.com, or you can reach me at sleon for any updates in technology. And for Sunil Joshi, you can search for him on LinkedIn, or you can email him at sunil.joshi@med.miami.edu if you have any questions about this. He is from the University of Miami. He is a cellular immunologist and very smart guy, knows what's happening, and this is quite exciting times. I'm learning more about viruses, flus, and it makes me want to be a virus researcher now.
Just yesterday I published one paper accepted on this phylogenetic or genomic analysis of this virus.
And how can they find that?
Well, right now, not in the, it is in the like a publication stage. So I think within a week or so, it will be online in PubMed. So
yeah, if you get that up, I'd love to retweet it and post it on my Facebook. So that'd be awesome.
Yes.
Well,
yes, of course.
Sunil, I really pleasure for taking your time to come on to this special, and I appreciate your information about this. And I've learned a lot. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm honored. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.